Welcome to the Productive Cute Podcast. This show is all about empowering you with biblical principles and practical resources to help you overcome being unproductive so you can produce in the area of your passion. Now your host, Quamon Fowler.
What's going on? This is Quamon Fowler coming to you with another episode for the Productive Cute Podcast. And man, this has really been an interesting time. I mean, I've never experienced anything like this in my life. But at the same time, the principles and the ideas have been really put to practice. You know, this is the quarantine time. And so we've been spending a lot of time at home. Everybody's been working from home. And but that hasn't really stopped anything, you know, from the standpoint of production for me. And I wanted to get a chance to share with you some of the things that I've been working on or even able to do, like this interview that you're going to watch today is actually from my guy, Dr. Sean Thunder Wallace, who has been doing quarantine interviews. And so I did one with him. It was really good. And I thought it'd be great to share with my podcast audience. So that's what I have for you. I split it up into two parts. So you'll be able to check out part one in this episode. And then you'll be able to come back and check out part two after this one. So really excited to share that with you. Of course, this interview is available on his channel as well. If you check out Dr. Thunder, look up Dr. Thunder on YouTube. We did some episodes even here for the podcast already. So you can check out those earlier episodes where we did some interviews, where we did some sessions with together where he was here. So happy to be able to go on his channel and do this interview, but I wanted to share it with you anyway here. So also what I've been working on the last couple weeks is putting together something for those musicians and producers, people who are looking to create music and even create from inspirational little ditties or loops. So I did put together my first bundle, and this is volume one. So I have that available. Send me a text message. This is how I've been doing it. If you send me a text, hashtag loops to textquamon.com, then you'll get the link. And I have a special offer for those musicians who want to get the whole bundle. And I think at this recording, at this point, I still have a few left to get before the price changes, because I was going to offer it to a certain amount of people. You know, I was going to offer it to at this particular price before the price changes. So you might want to hurry up and get in there and snag it before it goes up. And this bundle includes loops that I've created over the years, some good ones. I have 10 of them, and then I have 10 original songs plus one transcription. These are between singles and then play-alongs. These are all play-alongs, but they're singles and some songs from my albums, popular songs from my albums. You'll be able to get the MP3, the sheet music, and the play-along. And so if you have a song that you like of mine and you've always wanted to play it on your gig or performance, I would say broadcast, you know, you can now do that. Put it into your playlist. So make sure you text me. That's textquamon.com and just text hashtag loops. Okay, so that's it. We're going to go ahead and get right into the interview, part one of the quarantine interviews with Dr. Thunder. Here you go.
Quamon Fowler, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. Appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for, you know, being willing to do this. I know you're busy. This quarantine has got us all kind of at home, and things, but I think you thrive in that situation. I mean, I'm looking at your studio there, and it looks like you've probably been doubling down on you know, things that you're working on. I've been checking out a lot of additional content. I mean, you're always putting stuff out, but I've been checking out a lot of additional content that you've been giving us over the last few weeks, which, you know, I definitely appreciate. I know that, you know, folks that are watching this, we're going to give them an opportunity to know how to get in touch with you. We'll get all your information. It'll be in the description of this video.
Okay. Cool.
So, Quamont, tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you grew up, and what your childhood was like.
Well, I am from Fort Worth, Texas, and born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. My childhood was like what it was like. I don't know. I grew up in the what we call, I guess, the hood. So it wasn't that bad, but it was the hood. Typical type of upbringing. You know, your parents let you out play outside, and you had to come in when the light pole, you know, comes on at night, you know. And so you know, did a lot of playing basketball when I was younger. And my older brother, he's like almost 11 years older than me. He played basketball. So I kind of took after that and was, you know, doing the typical everyday things that young boys usually do, riding bikes, playing basketball. And when we moved from what they call the south side of Fort Worth, we moved to, I guess, a better area. And from there, that's when I kind of got into music. I think I got into music when I was, when we lived on the south side. I started playing violin first in the fifth grade. And so, but for some reason, music, it was just very appealing and striking to me. My dad didn't play an instrument. My mom, she sang in the choir, and then she also, we had an organ in the house, so she would play that sometimes. So she knew how to play. And so I just took a liking to music. And so it kind of was something that I just kind of ran with. In terms of, I guess, part of the, you know, the challenge that I had to come, that I came up with, is being visually impaired. So there were, you know, there were always things that I had to do as a child to go see vocational counselor coming up and all of that. And I had to get the bigger books and things, you know, as a kid to be able to read the assignments. And I had to have somebody help me with writing down what was on the overhead projector. So that was a part of my upbringing. But at the same time, when I got a hold of music, it was something that was, I guess, easy. And I didn't know how quick I was picking up stuff and memorizing stuff, because it was just instinctual. But I just remember, you know, a lot of the other musicians, when we was in orchestra, I could read, you know, and I could read the parts and everything, but I just remember them. So I memorized a lot of the stuff. But I didn't realize how much that was, I guess, abnormal until other folk would tell me, you know. But it was just one of those things, when you have one area that's weak, you know, another area, you compensate for that weakness. So, but pretty much, you know, that's what I did coming up fifth grade. Then seventh grade, I started playing saxophone. And I guess just kept on exploring. I don't know where you want me to stop.
No, I mean, I think all of that is great. You know, in doing these interviews, I'm always interested in, you know, kind of what, you know, just the general information about upbringing and then why music, you know, like what was it about music, maybe some mentors that you had early on. You were talking about being visually impaired. What are some of the things that you had to do with respect to music, you know, to be able to sort of balance that?
I guess the biggest thing when you're in a band and you have to read parts, it would be funny because I would listen to what the person next to me would be playing. And then, you know, when you're in rehearsal, you got start and stop. And so a lot of times I get some of it, you know, but then I'd have to listen to see what they play. And then I just remember that. And I would piece things together. And before you know it, you know, I would have the whole thing memorized. And so I remember, you know, a lot of times in high school, of course, you had to remember the marching band stuff. So I would remember all of that and practice it over and over. And when it came to orchestra, in terms of the band, the classical concert band, you know, I would be learning the parts and then messing around, improvising in between. So I was always practicing. And I think just being fascinated with music, and I was always recording too. And it was just something that I did. Even when I would play basketball, I would record our sessions in the backyard, because my dad had the backyard paved with cement and he put a basketball goal back there. So all the neighborhood kids would come over to our house and we'd play ball. But I would set my tripod up in the back and like video us playing. And then I would get those tapes and go inside and I would put one tape in to play it from the TV. And I'd use another camera to record me commentating on what we did. And so I would put it on slow motion. So if somebody's about to dunk or something, and he's going up for the dunk, and I just talk through it. So I'll make these videos, and whether it be basketball or even music, and I was always recording. When I would play music, I would always have some type of recording device. And anybody who knows me throughout my life, you know, they'll tell you the same thing. I was always recording everything. And what I would do at the end of the day, I would get those tapes and I just sit and watch them. I sit and or listen to them. And that's just how I developed. Like even when I still got a box in here, this, you know, where I live now, I still got a box of tapes. And a couple years back, my pastor had an old tape. Well, he had a tape player that had a USB connection on it. So you could put it right into your, you know, into some software and then bounce it. So funny thing, you know, this just reminded me of this. You know, Walter Smith, tenor player?
Yeah.
So back in high school, we would always run into each other, like for all region jazz band, you know, coming up. I was hearing about him. Like one year, I think it was my 12th grade year, I won first chair jazz saxophone in the state, and he was second chair. And so, you know, I was kind of cocky. I thought I was all that. And we went to rehearse in San Antonio, and I heard him I think it was that time. Yeah. Well, maybe actually I knew him before because we would run into each other because we did this other competition called AXO, NAACP AXO. But make a long story short, I was just saying I ran into him later, like for IAJE, it's called Gen Conference now. But back then, back in high school, it was a competition that we did, and I had my tape player and I recorded Walter doing his performance. And so I saw him, you know, 2-3 years ago, and so because he had played for the conference, and so he came off stage, and I had my phone, I had the audio file on my phone. And so I just went up to him. I was like, "What's up, man?" And I just played this. And he was listening. He's like, "What?" He's like, "Man, what are you?" He's like, "How in the world?" It just blew him away because it was like from 1998, mm-hmm. a performance of him playing Autumn Leaves, you know? Yeah. So it was a good one. It was funny. But yeah, I also got Keon Harold on trumpet, you know, a lot, you know, I got a lot of guys who are probably well known now. I got like tape recordings of those cats, but you know, that's why I always wanted to record because, you know, you never know what monumental moment you're about to experience when you play, you know, while somebody plays.
Yeah, you know, recording is for me also has been a regular part of my development. And the story that I tell my students all the time is it's about Coltrane. And remember, so Coltrane was playing with Miles, and he got kicked out of the band. And for 2 years he was playing with Monk, and he also signed a record contract with Prestige. Mm-hmm. And I acquired years ago a box set, which was all of the Prestige stuff from that two-year time period. It's 16 CDs. Now, most of those projects were projects in his name. Mm-hmm. And I realized by seeing that one of the key factors in the contract that he signed, and one of the main reasons why he signed it, is because he could record as much as he wanted to. And I think he knew that the more he could hear himself back, you know, the better he would be. You know, he'd have more to critique, and it could accelerate his development.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's good enough for Coltrane, it's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing. And the other thing is, can you imagine how many recordings he would have if he had the kind of devices that we have now, the kind of quality, you know, portability, the devices? There's I think it's from the same time period. I'm pretty sure it is. That Thelonious Monk Live at the Five Spot, mm-hmm. record. And I think Coltrane's wife had brought in some recording device and recorded that gig. And it's all like clanking glasses and people talking and stuff. And it's hard to hear what's going on. But that's some of the greatest Coltrane playing, wow. Especially on a Trinkle Tinkle, you yeah. know, it's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, man, I just love documenting things. And you know, the thing that is so phenomenal, you know, when my dad passed away in 2012, my sister, I was talking with my sister, and she plays bass too. She's older than me. But anyway, she was telling me about how dad, when he would go off, because he was a truck driver, and he would go off, this was before they had video cameras or something, because he would take pictures and he would record himself on tape or something, and he would send that back to them. And so they would look at the pictures and hear him on tape talking about the different places that he was going. And so I was like, wow, that's amazing. So when the video camera, I guess, came around, he got a big video camera, and he would just use the video camera when, you know, for my birthday parties and for, you know, I used to bowl. So he would videotape the bowling and going to family reunions. He would video and kind of commentary over everything. And so I didn't realize how much I got all that, you know, from my dad. He kind of set that all up for me.
Yeah, likewise, my dad, he had, you know, video cameras. Of course, you know, my dad was, he was a musician, and he had his own record company and equipment and stuff. So in addition to the videography that he regularly was doing, like every holiday season, you know, every big moment, you know, most of my performances and stuff when I was a kid, all of that stuff. In addition to that, you know, I got to have, you know, interaction with, you know, the latest and greatest, you know, studio gear. And it was, and as I got older, the gear, the technology kept changing, you know, till when, you know, I was recording, you know, computer based stuff like, you know, everybody does now. It's pretty much computer based. And it gave me a different perspective on how the equipment works, the virtual versions of the equipment, how that corresponds to the real stuff. You know, if you actually had to like use a real mixing board and actually patch cables and like use actual effects units, like a reverb unit or a DBX unit or like a compressor, and getting the signal in and out, and, you know, and all everything that has to happen so that you get a sound and that the unit is working correctly, it makes it so that it's much easier when I'm looking at virtual versions, you know, of software and imagining how that actually works.
But
I think I totally get the documenting stuff, recording also, I think, from my dad.
Yeah, and before YouTube, when I would see jazz performances that would come on PBS, like back then they used to show a lot of Lincoln Center stuff, and, you know, they would show, I guess on KERA PBS, they would show sometimes like live at Newport Jazz Festival. I would see James Carter and Branford Marsalis. I ended up buying some videos too. So I remember that one with Branford's group when he had Kenny Kirkland, Bob Hurst, and Lewis Nash. You know, Stepien, was Stepien Faith, or so I think it was one of the tunes on there. But I would watch that video like religiously, just over and over.
Yeah.
And so it was just one of those things. I just wanted to do that. I enjoyed the sound. I just enjoyed the integrity of the music. And I just had to get whatever I can. And my dad used to take me to a bookstore called Borders Books and Music. And it was cool because they had a piano in there and they would have live performances in there. And I remember going and checking out some of the local guys, a friend of mine, Arlington Jones, piano player. I met him there, and then I ended up sitting in with them, and then I ended up getting gigs there. So I would play there. The cool thing about it, they would give us a voucher. They wouldn't pay us with money, but they would give us like $100 voucher or whatever for you to get a bunch of CDs. So that's how I was able to get my music collection up, because I would play there and be able to get all the stuff. But it was so exciting back then, you know, when you could get a physical CDs and look in the, you know, look through the aisles and see, get to choose between Ornette Cobb and Dexter Gordon over here and John Coltrane and Sonny Stitt and flip through and just see who's got albums. You know, that those were the days. You know, that was good.
Yeah, so it seems like so in my life I never wanted to do anything professionally but play music. That was, I don't feel like there was ever a time like I feel like it totally chose me. Like I just, you know, I didn't really have a choice. It was like I was already off to the races. And that was the destination, and it always was that way. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I feel that way. I think with my upbringing, coming up in church, and you know, having a my dad was always sharing scriptures with me, and my mom had me in church. So that really two things together, like music and then spirituality,
right,
you know, from a biblical standpoint. So, and then a teacher that I had later, Rochella Parks, Washington now, she kind of was, when I was like 14, she would always, you know, tell me, when you play from your heart, your soul, you be a preacher, you know, when you play, you spread your message. So I always viewed music as like a ministry. And so it was like a call. And I remember when I was younger, like you mentioned John Coltrane, and John Coltrane had that he had that seriousness and dedication and that spiritual, upbringing or perspective, where he was always reaching. And so I kind of took a liking to that, and that's kind of what I wanted to do as well. And so, but, you know, over time, as you grow older. And, you know, the Lord kind of showed me, just like the saxophone, you know, the saxophone is an instrument that I use to share my voice through. You know, when I play the saxophone, they really hear me. And so I got this epitome that, just the same way as I use the saxophone, God was showing me, I want to use you for my glory. And that really changed my perspective. I mean, it just made it that much bigger. And then this is kind of what led me to later write my book called The Christian Musician, Learn What Your Real Gift Is and How to Succeed With and Beyond Music. So when you get married or when you want to get married and then you want kids and want to take care of kids, you really have to learn, okay, how can I make money with this? This is a smooth transition. So, but what I started seeing that I needed to do, I was passionate about music, but the way that I wanted to do music, a lot of times in our commercial environments or, I guess the things that are most accessible to us, a lot of times the type of music is not the type of music that I would want to play. And even some environments are probably not the best, or the intentions behind, you know, the environments or the music, you know, it's not the type of things that I wanted to do. I did it and played in different places, but it was always a conviction that was always a little deeper than the average musician that I would be around. And so it's just one of those things. Once it's in your heart, you really got to seek those things out and really see what is it that God really wants you to do. And so that's when I started learning about or looking into really monetizing your music, or more so taking what you have and this is how I look at it. Like, I got so many analogies basically from scripture. One of the ones was when the disciples were with Jesus and all of the 5,000 came and they was needing to be fed, and the disciples said, all we have is 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. And Jesus was like, bring me what you have. And they brought what they had to Jesus, and he multiplied it and was able to feed the 5,000 plus have some left over. And so I got something from that. So basically, take what you have, give it to the Lord, and then watch him multiply, you know?
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And so I looked at that. You know, I had challenges where I couldn't go out and work a normal job like everybody else could. I spent all this time practicing and seeking out music. This was like in my 20s, early 20s when I started kind of think, like, yeah, I would say, yeah, early 20s when I started thinking about all of this stuff. And so he was like, okay, another scripture says, Proverbs 16:3, commit thy works unto the Lord and your thoughts will be established, you know. And it's another scripture to talk about, you know, he will bless the works of your hands. And so I was taking all of these scriptures and praying and meditating and thinking about what can I do to use what I have in order to bring an increase so that I don't have to be dependent upon just playing gigs. And so the idea, I was practicing at my mom's house one time, and then it just came, you need to get paid for practicing. It's like, get paid for practice. And so that led to me starting at the time Musician Webshed, which later turned into Jazz Webshed. And so I created a platform where musicians could subscribe to it and have access to different things that I would be practicing on. And so it really grew pretty good, pretty quick. It was almost to like $1,000 a month, you know, when I was first getting going. And I was creating videos, putting them in the site. I was doing like what you're doing. You know, I was doing interviews with cats. I was doing live streams. I was live streaming rehearsals. I was just getting content, putting it in there and just, you know, just doing as much as I could because I wanted to create income, you know, in addition to the gigs that I had going. And so I also looked at it where, you know, I have one audience of people who enjoy my music. They just want to, you know, get my songs or listen to me play. And then you got people who are interested in my teaching. They want to know how I play and some of the ideas that I work on in order to be able to do what I do. So I started looking at, okay, underneath these categories, I need to have, you know, for performance, I need to have, okay, gigs, I need to do CDs, MP3s, flash drives. And over here for teaching, I could do live one-on-one, I could do group classes, I could have a membership site. You know, I would just list different products and services that I could offer under each category. And then I would just go out and do it. You know, I put out, now I have 7 CDs and I have, you know, Jazz Webshed YouTube channel, and I have the Texas Tenor Music Academy. So people can join the Music Academy. I do Skype lessons. I've done online performances. And I monetize, you know, I have my YouTube channel monetized. So all of those things are the result of how, you know, what was impressed upon me, Yeah, 20 years ago. Wow.
Time flies, right? Now, it seems like along your journey, maybe you discovered some of the stuff that I was doing online, and then you got in touch with me, and that's kind of how we met. And I had some really really cool conversations, some deep conversations, and then I kept in touch with you, kept track of you, and then a few years ago I had you were the headliner for the Ohio State Jazz Festival. That was during my sabbatical. So you also taught my students, my studio for, what was it? I think it was like a 3-week, residency. And then we got to hang more. And then we've been trying to do some other videos and other projects we're trying to collaborate on. So, you know, everyone, you know, look out for that stuff, you know, as we keep collaborating and getting some more content out there.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Productive Q podcast, where we help you to overcome being unproductive so you can produce in the area of your passion. If you really enjoy this podcast and you would like to support it with a financial gift, go to bit.ly/supportpq. That's bit.ly/supportpq. Your financial support will help in the production of future programs. Thank you so much for listening.